I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Spider-Knight?
Alas, friend Spider-Man. By what sorcery doth small ceiling torch shine forth?
It's called a light bulb.
Welcome to Prattleworld. I'm your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to another edition of Spider Knights of the Round Table, where a guest and myself will discuss a much-loved subject in depth in a roundtable format. And today I'm joined by cyberpunk Georgina Ruth Hanmer of Kusanagi Cosplay UK. Please follow, like, subscribe, etc. on her Instagram and Facebook. And today we're going to be talking all things Neon Genesis Evangelion. Welcome, Georgina.
Hiya, thanks for having me.
That was a bombastic intro.
My usual, it's kind of my thing. Hiya, hiya.
I'll do. So I got you on because I know you're a huge anime fan.
Indeed.
Huge Ghost in the Shell fan.
Oh, yes.
and I heard this was coming on Netflix and it piqued my interest. And then you on Facebook were like, oh, you've got to get into this. It's so good, so good. And I'd heard a thing, like, for me, I'm not like a kind of a big anime fan,
yeah,
but I know I'm casual. I'm very casual in that respect. But you were like, check it out. And I checked it out recently and I just had to talk about it and I had to get you on it. You've got to be a bit of an expert on this.
I have been told I am a bit of a go-to when it comes to all things anime. So that is, yeah, I do get a lot of people like, oh, do you recommend this? Have you seen it? How's it? Yeah.
The fountain of knowledge.
Something like that. Maybe a puddle of knowledge.
Quite a deep... Bit shallow.
Pretty deep, though, you know. You definitely get your socks wet.
Definitely. So I think, first of all, for people that don't know what, Neon, should we just call it Ava? For sure.
I tend to say Evangelion half the time.
Evangelion. Let's just say Evangelion. So what is it? What's the premise of Evangelion? I know this is a hard question.
It is quite a hard question. It's like, can you define it by a genre or anything like that? It kind of skirts a lot of genres.
It does. It really does.
So you can't exactly put it into just a few words to give somebody a bit of a, you know, bit of a rough idea about it. You do have to, you know, follow on with, oh, but it does this and it does that.
Yeah, takes a few left turns.
It does, yeah, but you really have to watch it.
I would agree with you. I totally agree.
Yeah, I'd like to say that it's definitely biomech.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely biomech. Yeah. It's not full on mech like Gundam, for example. Yeah. Definitely biomech. Dystopia, post dystopia.
Yeah, I'd say dystopia. Yeah. Kind of. Yeah.
I definitely wouldn't put it in the cyberpunk genre though.
No.
But even just going by that, it's still a little bit vague.
Yeah. It's really a huge mishmash of lots of things. Like, obviously, like, some parts of me think that the way the... What was the creator's name? Sorry, the...
Well, Hideaki Anno.
There you go. I think I'll refer to you for all the Japanese names today. I won't even bother to try and mispronounce them. I think maybe his pitch, like, he wanted to do the... all the kind of introspective stuff and the philosophical stuff he wants to talk about. I feel like to get that green lit, he went, but there's giant monsters, aliens, and giant robots with massive automatic rifles as big as buildings. Interested? Yes, please. Yeah. Sold.
It is something like that that would sell an anime, to be honest. But I don't think he had to do a lot of selling because the studio that made it, Gainax, he was one of the top dogs there.
Right.
So
he ran the show.
I'm doing this, and I'm going to do it my way. Blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we've still not really described it, have we? I think
it's difficult to describe.
Yeah, I think on a base level, it's about aliens came to Earth.
Yeah.
There was a few kind of massive extinction level almost explosions, if you would call them that. And the Earth has had to recover over kind of 15 years. It's 2015 it's set in, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. 2015. So on the timeline, did you look up the timeline?
Oh, I was a bit nervous to look up the entire timeline because I was like, isn't there like 14 or something?
I mean, but the thing is, though, the actual timeline itself is not clearly defined in the show.
Hmm.
You know, when you watch through all the episodes, it just all seems to kind of happen.
Yeah.
And then 2000's always mentioned, and then 2015, which is the time is set in.
Yeah.
But not much on what happened before.
Genuinely, the show is very vague about everything. How does Shinji know how to get into a robot? And how does he know how to operate it? And what's his connection to the robot?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not technically a robot. I'm going to say it's a robot.
Yeah.
It's effectively a robot. But it's intentionally vague. Every episode I was like, oh, they're going to uncover this, or they're going to uncover this. When they answered questions, it led to more questions.
It did, yeah.
So, yeah, it's like I kind of think of like Wolverine, because like he always tries to get his, you know, he's like, what's my past? Where's my history? What happened at Weapon X? And then it's like, no, just more questions now.
Exactly.
Sorry. But yeah, so it revolves around Shinji, a young lad who's been contacted by his dad for unknown reasons, not seen him in years. They had a bit of, the mum's dead, you know, much like your Disney protagonist, the mum's always dead.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Constantly dead.
Sorry,
so and he's invited by Misato.
Yeah, Misato Katsuragi.
Who's probably my favourite character, I think.
Oh, she's definitely my favourite.
She's brilliant. Just brilliant. Really fun, really cool character. Really, like, strong female character, but also she's got, like, a fun, quirky side.
She's got the fun, quirky side, but... Like, yeah, once you watch the show and then obviously you get past all that, you see that she is quite broken.
Oh, yeah, definitely. She's like, she's...
Massively broken.
To be honest, I think every single character in this is shattered beyond all absolute damage. Like, realistic kind of psychological kind of damage.
Yeah.
You know, and it's quite relatable as well. Like, if you've ever, like, you know, I'm sure everyone's had some form of, like, kind of depression. Maybe it's not clinical, but you've had, you know, a time when you were very, 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 very sad or, exactly. you know, you felt left out. And Shinji is a good, like, all the characters are a good example of that in some way. But yeah, we follow Shinji and, like you said, get in the robot. His dad wants him to get into a massive robot and fight an alien that all the aliens are kind of named after. So there's a lot of biblical and religious imagery, isn't there?
Biblical references and imagery, usually sort of Judeo-Christian stuff. So a lot of stuff from like the Kabbalah, from the Bible as well. And yeah, they do actually use angels' names.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think my favorite was, I think it's Ramiel.
Ramiel, yeah.
I think it's kind of like a diamond shape.
Some of them are completely unpronounceable.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even go. There was a Sandalphon, I think.
Sandalphon. Wow. Yeah.
Although you don't get like your Gabriels.
Yeah, yeah. Standard. Your standard ones.
Your standard.
I think EL, I think that EL means, I think at the end of the word, I think it means of God or something like that, translates roughly. There are literally millions of videos on YouTube. We're never going to cover all the subjects. We're never going to cover all the, like, you could spend all a whole podcast, three or four, like a season of podcasts, just on the religious imagery and iconography. You know, we won't cover everything, but I think, I hope this is a nice jumping on point where it kind of gets people interested to give the show a go. But yeah, I found that really fascinating. Even in the opening, by the way, the opening song is incredible.
In fact, me and John were actually on about this last night because I started rewatching it again last night, you know, sort of in preparation for
this. Of course, good research. I like that.
Yeah, I had to do my research.
Yeah, definitely.
No, we were on about, you know, some of the greatest anime opening themes. So yeah, Evangelion's opening has to be possibly one of the greatest.
Incredible.
And I mean, this is going alongside like Tank. Cowboy Bebop, that opening is absolutely amazing as well. So it's, you know, you get ones that just literally stick in your head and you know, you watch
it. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's almost like, and again, it does conjure up, I mean, in the opening, there's loads of religious imagery.
Not just that, but there's quite a few Easter eggs in the opening as well.
Is there?
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
Please tell us more.
Easter eggs as much as like, you know, references to maybe something else or whatever. But as you watch the series through, the intro actually makes a bit of sense.
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they talk about the AT field.
Yes.
Through the series, and then you actually find out what it stands for in the opening. Absolute terror field. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Absolute. Because they said, I couldn't remember, like, I kind of sort of, because it's quite a lot of fast images.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you know, and it's a lot of images, a lot, it's like, to be honest, if you are have some form of epilepsy.
Oh God, there are some full of seizure episodes as well.
Yeah, if you've got some form of epilepsy, I would not recommend watching the show, because even, it was too much for even me, and I'm not epileptic at all. And but yeah, they do flash a lot of characters and imagery and
a lot strobing,
especially in that intro. But I love it. It starts off quite beautiful and then it gets really into it and it's like proper cheesy kind of. It feels like late 80s music,
almost like 80s. But I think when you think about it, Japan is sort of a little bit behind music.
Yeah, well, you might say. I mean, technology. They are top dollar, but I think they might be a bit behind in the times in regards to us being Westerners.
Exactly.
You know, in comparison, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. Kind of some of the weirder stuff we'll go into. I would describe it as, you know, you've alien invasion, mecha.
Yeah.
And
the human condition.
Yes, I was right on that. You nailed it. Read my mind. Yeah, exactly that. The frailty and the fragility of just being alive.
Exactly.
And it's incredible that a Japanese cartoon effectively can deeply make me think about my own life and decisions I've made and where I am and how I feel about myself and how I perceive myself. It is astounding the level of just
intricacy and detail that's gone into it. Research as well.
As well. It's not yet. There's loads of The Hedgehog's Dilemma.
Yeah.
Is a great example. And I think that really represents the show quite well. I can't remember the psychologist or who came up with it.
I can't remember his name. Dilemma, but there's a lot of like Freudian stuff in it.
Yes, there is a lot of
Freudian. And stuff that can be traced back to Kierkegaard as well.
Yes, you are right, yeah.
In fact, I'll just briefly skirt upon this as well.
Do it.
You know about the whole, I think it was Freudian actually, the id, the ego, and the superego?
Yeah.
So the three kids, so there's Asuka, Rei, and Shinji, they all represent, you know, a form of it. So yeah, the id, the ego, and the superego.
And not only that, the three computers as well.
The Magi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so it was, represents her as
a scientist,
a woman, and a mother. Wow.
Yeah, that's Naoko Akari, that's Risa's mother.
I don't even know where to go next. You know, like, what do we even talk about?
I think maybe some of the development of it to begin with.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, if you know Evangelion, like off the bat anyway, maybe you watched it like several years ago when it was the ADV release that they did. Obviously, they did their own English dub and released it with the Japanese, you know, on the subtitles as well. So it's been around for quite a while. It was released in Japan in the years 1995 and 1996. It was actually broadcast at tea time.
Really?
Yes.
So a family show?
Totally a family show. But, you know, they figured out, you know, like after a couple of episodes, and especially when it gets into like the middle of the season, and they were like, oh, this is a bit hard for, you know, when everybody's, you know, sat around the table watching a bit of telly, you know, eating the hot pot or whatever. Like, oh, perhaps maybe we'd better move it. So they did actually move it to a more adult time.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously, definitely not a kids' show.
No, there's though it stars children.
Yeah.
You know, teenagers.
Not for kids.
Definitely not for kids. There is a fair bit of kind of sexuality in it. I know, obviously, there's culturally, you know, there's quite a few differences for how we perceive kind of, you know,
sexuality, yeah. sexual acts, and, you know, the age of consent and the legal age to have sex in Japan. I know it's a lot younger. I think it's 13 or 14.
I think it's 14.
Yeah, roughly. And which is sure. which would I think they're about maybe 15 in the show.
They are about 14. 14.
Sorry. Yeah. 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 And there is a lot. I mean. Don't get me wrong, I was a very horny 14-year-old. Don't get know what I mean? I get it. I get why. And I get why you would probably want to see that as a 14-year-old as well. But I think I find it a little problematic as, you know. But again, it's more of a cultural thing.
It's a cultural
you know,
thing,
I find it, you know, uncomfortable to see, you know, overt sexuality. I mean, to be fair, I watched Netflix's Big Mouth, which has a lot of kind of humorous, overtly sexual things.
Yeah.
Like one of my friends said, I can't watch because it makes me too uncomfortable. And I was like, as like, but that's quite true to what I experienced going through puberty. Yeah. So I was kind of like, that's why it's funnier to me because I relate to it. You know, obviously not, you know, hormone monsters and everything. Oh. But no, I mean, I did grow a lot of body hair, so maybe I am my own hormone monster.
I did too.
We all did. It's natural. It's part of growing up. Anyway, yeah. So there are scenes and moments. Especially in the end of Evangelion, there's especially a moment where I was like, oh, did that? Yeah, that did happened. Just happen. Yeah. Yeah, that was quite gross. Won't spoil it. No, I mean, it kind of spoils itself, I guess. Yeah, but yeah, there's a few moments, you know, of kind of 14-year-old girl nudity and things like that. But, I mean, if you can get past that,
I mean, that is kind of part and parcel, though, with anime as a whole.
Yeah,
anyway.
True, yeah.
You know, like you said, it is like a cultural thing. True. So, I mean, even in anime that was made for, like, younger kids.
Yeah. There is still
some like resounding type.
Like all the Dragon Ball stuff, all the stuff in Dragon Ball Z with Master Roshi and, you know, Goku putting his finger somewhere and things like that. You know, it's, yeah, there's a lot of that. And again, we're not saying it's wrong. You know, it's different for the Western audience.
As a Westerner watching it, yeah, it can be a lot. Oh,
yeah. there's a bit like, but if you get, they're very small and in those sequences, very quick and very kind of done, you know, and there's a few kind of awkward kind of romantic moments. But again, as a teenager, you had those. It's fine. You didn't go off and, you know, strap yourself into a giant robot, but, you know, you had the other stuff. It's fine. Right. Where were we? Where do we go now? I tell you what, let's focus on the action side of the show before we get too depressed going into the other bit.
Going a bit too deep.
So what do you think? What do you think of the action sequences? The bits with the angels. So the enemies that are invading, the aliens, are classed as angels. Numbered angels, and they all come. Like those first few episodes, all the angels are really unique. Like none of them are the same. They don't even look the same, sound the same.
The designs of them are just completely something else.
Yeah, otherworldly. Like
it's like you think of an alien, and you instantly revert to that image of, you know, the big black eyes, the grey skin, the skinniness of them and everything. But these just look absolutely nothing like what you could imagine.
Yeah, it's, you know, just something.
Yeah, it's almost like a child has drawn something and then an adult has gone, oh, actually, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to build upon that and then stick it in my hand.
There you go. Done. But I think every angel presented a unique problem for them to solve.
It did, yeah.
And I really liked them. I think one of my favorite episode, I think it was Ramuel, that's the kind of diamond shaped angel, and
the positron rifle.
You've probably never seen a giant robot with a giant sniper rifle, and I know I hadn't in my life, and another one with like a giant shield. And it was fascinating to see that kind of the delving into Rey's character, who's kind of this quiet, mysterious girl.
Very stoic.
Yeah, very stoic, very, you know, doesn't really know how to handle emotions or show emotions necessarily. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could say she was maybe somewhere on the spectrum or something, you know, if you wanted to delve into her kind of psychology and
could
stuff.
Could be seen as that. But I think that is one of the things that they do pick up on this show is... So obviously you've got the adults and then you've got the kids that have been given this almighty task of essentially protecting mankind and the planet from these knobheads.
That's a good way to describe it. They are knobs. Are we the knobheads?
Oh,
humans.
Oh, throwing a curveball there. But it's got a lot to do with, you can go back into the psychology of it again, the way that these kids are brought up, how they handle life up until then, how they handle life as a pilot. Ray, for one of these ones, is obviously just not very socially adapted at all because of the way that she was brought up.
Exactly.
Shinji has his problems because of a sort of similar circumstance. Mm-hmm. Oscar probably has this as well.
Yeah.
They all have it in some...
They've got some form of trauma as informed who they became and who they are.
Yeah.
And their lives have led them to, you know, getting in the robot. And they, like, Shinji's doing it because he feels like this is the one thing that people like. You know, he said his life was not, you know, before this was not very spectacular, not very interesting, very dull. I think he lived with a teacher, I believe he says.
Yeah.
Something like that.
He was, his mother died. His father basically abandoned him to carry on with his research. Maybe go into that a bit later. But ended up living with his teacher. Was a kid that was... He just basically did as he was told, you know, and he didn't stop doing anything because if he wasn't told, stop that.
Yeah, it would give him time to think and to worry and to, you know, and he gets his call from his father and he thinks, finally, I can do something. My father will love me again. Yeah, he must need me. It's be really important. And it is. You know, it's the fate of the human race, put on the shoulders of a small child. And they don't, again, they don't really explain why he has to do it or why he's the only one who should do it. You do see the kind of, I think the robot kind of, unit one, isn't it? Unit one. Kind of saves him from, I think, some collapsing.
Falling roof. Yeah. Does all that business,
And it shouldn't operate on its own. It shouldn't operate
without a pilot in it. And that's the reason why Shinji has been brought there, because he is basically the only one who can pilot Unit One.
Yeah. They do. I think they do kind of explain it in the end, don't they?
Yeah.
I can't. Yeah.
Sort of.
Again, it's very vague.
It's not confirmed.
I think you were saying to me as well that the AT fields were like. Yeah. Tell me about that. You were saying the other day something about that.
And this is when you get into the meat and potatoes of Evangelion. The AT field, the absolute terror field.
It's basically a kind of force field for
a force field, yeah. So the angels have them and they can use them defensively as an actual shield or they can use them offensively, sort of like a gravity type power or whatever, you know. They force it out and it just destroys everything that it touches.
I mean, that sounds like absolute terror to me.
Definitely. But the AT field is, so you have a soul.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The AT field is what keeps it as one, as an individual.
Okay. Contains it,
yeah. The soul essentially, I think I read this somewhere, some article that somebody wrote, and they've gone quite, you know, deep into the whole, you know, the psychology and this, that and the other. But they were saying that a soul has an idea of the physical form of what it wants to look like.
Okay.
That is what the AT field is.
Right.
So humans look the way that they do because of this soul and the AT field that makes it solid, basically. Mm. Well, yeah, when the LCL.
Yes. Yeah.
The primordial soup.
Yes. Yummy.
The Tang, as everybody called it, because it looked like Tang in the water.
It does. It does.
Tang, yeah.
They've been tangoed.
Color. Because that's one thing that you have to talk about is the human instrumentality
part. Oh, definitely, yeah.
Going on completely throughout the series.
Yeah, they set it up very early on.
Yeah.
Good old Gendo, who's Shinji's father.
Fucking robot Shinji.
Yeah. He constantly has that those fingers interlocked, looking very intensely at the screen.
Stern.
Yeah, just constantly like this. I think I saw a meme somewhere where he was on the toilet and he's like, he's got that, he's got his hands under his chin kind of thing, under his nose, which made me laugh. It's like, it's so vast and so all-encompassing, yet so vague, yet it keeps your attention, yet you keep coming back. Like, kind of, I didn't binge it all in one go, but like the first series I pretty much did,
yeah.
I think in a day or a two, because I was just like, this is just really intense, awesome. Really good.
Yeah, as well.
I like the characters, you know. Yeah, let's talk about some of the characters we haven't talked about. Like, let's talk about our favorite character. Let's talk about Masato. who is a very, like we said, very like strong, interesting, you know, unique, broken, character. She's kind of, is she a captain general?
She's a captain in the beginning,
yeah.
And then because she is Nerve's sort of operations and battle director. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because of her work, you know, she's obviously done her job really well,
yeah.
And then she gets promoted to major.
Yeah, that was a major.
Yeah. I don't know, Masato. She's. I prefer the adults in this to the kids.
I think so too.
The adults are so much more interesting than what the kids are. The kids are going through all this business. Yeah, they've been charged with this task of protecting.
But it's still kind of teenage angst, isn't it?
Yeah. They've got the teenage angst side covered. And when you're an adult, I think you can more relate to the adult problems that the adults in the program are having.
Definitely. I think what I really liked is that she is all business at work.
Like, oh yeah, she's all business.
Stern, serious. Yeah. Composed.
And she has her reasons for doing it as well. She has absolutely valid reasons as to why she's doing what she's doing.
So the first cataclysm, they call it the first impact, don't they? And she was, I believe she was saved by her father.
Second impact.
Oh, sorry. No, sorry.
First impact was the one that happened billions of years ago.
Big Bang kind of thing.
Did you look into that one?
No, I didn't.
I'll give you.
Is that part of the timeline?
It's quite integral to it.
Okay.
So, the first ancestral race,
mm-hmm.
The race was apparently dying out, not doing as good as it was. Mm-hmm. They sent the seeds of life out into the universe.
Mm.
So, you have one which is Adam and the white moon,
mm-hmm.
Lilith and the black moon.
Okay.
They're sent out into the universe to try and find a planet in which to essentially populate.
Okay.
The two seeds are not supposed to land on one planet. Adam crash landed in Antarctica.
Yes.
Yeah. And Lilith
crash
landed in Tokyo.
Ah.
They should not have been on the same planet.
Mm.
Now, this is when it starts getting a bit weird. Angels come from Adam.
Right.
Humans come from Lilith. They're not supposed to be there together.
Mm.
They're both sent out with the Lance of Longinus.
Yes, yeah.
Lilith was broken in the process when she careered down to Earth and broke. And Adam's was still intact.
Mm.
So the spears are sort of like automatically made to sort of cryogenically freeze the one that they're with.
Okay.
Hence why Adam was...
Kind of a stasis.
Yeah, sort of in stasis. This is why Adam was inactive.
Right.
And then Lilith populated the Earth with humans.
Okay.
The second contact experiment was when they found Adam in the Antarctic, and this is Masato's father.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Dr. Katsuragi, and the expedition that they had. They had a contact experiment, which, when you look into it, is the fusing of DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Lilith's DNA fusing with Adam, which should not happen.
Yeah.
Hence the big explosion.
Right.
Adam woke up. Yeah.
Cool.
Everybody died, except Masato.
That's quite interesting that we kind of come from Lilith, because biblically, Lilith is the queen of monsters.
Biblically, she's actually Adam's first wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was cast out of Eden.
Yeah.
And Eve was made.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So she's considered kind of, or they might be queen of demons or queen of monsters. I know there's like a version of her in Marvel Comics.
She basically
got
booted out of Eden and became a bit salty about it.
And I won't blame her, to be honest. Paradise or nothing else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, fair play. I guess that's kind of the first breakup, I guess.
But yeah, your first impact happened billions of years ago. Life came from it, evolved. Second impact, a bad experiment went wrong, basically destroyed half the life on the planet. And this is another reason why the AT fields come into it.
Yeah.
Because the two were not supposed to exist on the same on the same planet at any one time, they have these things called anti-AT fields. So And it comes back round to essentially the end of Evangelion as what happens there. The angels are coming because they basically want to wipe out what's on the planet so Adam can take over and their species can reign. And then obviously you've got a lot of like these organizations and corporations and stuff that are in Evangelion. So you have Nerve.
Yeah.
That used to be called Gehirn.
Of course.
Yeah. And then you've got Sele, who are just this board of director pillocks.
They're just like dominoes, aren't they? Basically. If I'm remembering this correctly, Sele want to use human instrumentality.
Yeah.
Which is spoilers, but it is
the amalgamation of every single soul on Earth into goop.
Yeah, pretty much.
Back this, to fine.
Yeah, so we effectively begin again.
Yeah.
You know, as a race. Now that's they feel like, you know, we've come so far. It's all gone to shit. Yeah. We need to hit the restart button.
Well, it's basically they call it the next stage of evolution.
Yeah.
Going back to the Tang, the primordial soup is everybody has their pros and their cons, the good aspects of a person and the bad aspects of a person. Mm. If everybody merges together, it's apparently supposed to
balance out.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And I think if I'm right in remembering this as well, Gendo wants to do the human instrumentality, so to combine everybody,
but on his own terms.
And then is he planning? I believe he's planning to separate at a later time. Was that right?
No, actually, Gendo basically wants to be with his wife.
Yes, yeah,
his wife Yui, which is his mother.
Yeah.
He wants to be with her so bad, he's going along with Sailor's plan of instrumentality, but he kind of wants to do it on his terms.
Yeah, yeah.
Sele, on the other hand, and this was another sort of theory / rumour / potential truth, that the Evangelions were supposed to host the Sele board of directors. They would essentially be gods, you know.
So they'd have the most power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'd have all the power and they'd essentially be immortal as well. Mm. And whatever was happening in the goop down on Earth, they would reign over them.
Wow.
That's pretty much the short version of it.
Yeah, true. Again, like, not like you're explaining so much. I had no idea. Like, the show tells you nothing. You know, even the original ending that I'm sure we'll talk about, it's like it's all super vague. There's hints and there's things they mention and you're like, oh, I'm sure that'll wind up and be talked about.
One of those ones where you take from it what you will.
Yeah.
Make your own assumptions.
A lot of kind of headcanon.
Yeah, you can literally watch it as just full-on entertainment. I'm watching this program. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Seems good. The last two episodes were a bit fucking weird. And yeah, be done with it. Oh yeah, it's a good program. Yeah, watch it. And then that next person might be like, oh, fucking office.
Yeah, exactly.
This is so deep. This is so...
Yeah.
There's two ways on which you can watch Evangelion. Pure entertainment or you are going to be essentially like me and be quite OCD about it like anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what you've done. There's been like I said, it grabs you. It does it pulls you in. And you do want to know what the human instrumentality project. You do not want to know more about Sele. You want to see how Ritsuko's mother died. You want to see, you know, who is Rei? What is Rei? And, you know, what happened to Yui? All this stuff, which again, it's kind of like, yeah, here's something, but there's more questions now.
Yeah.
And that's cool, but I can see how it would frustrate people as well.
Yeah.
Like, especially, like we said, a Western audience, we like everything. We were like, oh, we got to give it a nice ending and we need to tie everything up and, you know, sort of stuff.
And but have like a whole episode dedicated to basically giving you the answers on a silver platter.
Yes. Yeah.
This does not do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You brought up the original ending. Let's talk about the two endings.
I hate those two episodes. I love the show, but those two episodes can get in the sea.
So, just get in the sea.
Get in it.
So, from what I've heard, the director you mentioned before, I can't pronounce his name.
Hideaki Anno.
That guy. he had quite kind of crippling depression, chronic depression.
He had really bad depression even before he was doing Evangelion. Right. And I think this was maybe his way of sort of like, right, I need to do something. Yep. And then as the series progressed, you could tell that he was getting...
You start to notice less robots.
Yeah.
And you start to notice a lot more
drama.
More drama, more dream sequences, more kind of human interaction or human, you know, not non-interaction, if you will. I actually, like, I know you were a fan of those last two episodes. I know also they were running low on budget, I think, towards that.
Oh, they were running incredibly.
Yeah.
Low on budget and low on time as well. Obviously, because anime is one of these ones where they usually don't maybe make the full series before it's screened.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because like halfway it takes through, yeah. so long to animate a single episode. So, you know, they'd like, yeah, they'd maybe do a couple of episodes and then it'd be this, right.
Crack on.
You're running a bit late on this one.
Yeah,
when,
come on, mate.
When are you going to like ship it to us, that kind of thing. Yeah, they were running low on budget. Anno was basically at the end of his tether.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, fair enough.
Was spiraling back into whatever depression it was. And he just ended up with those two episodes. They are Marmite, those two episodes.
Mm.
And you've really got to delve into them as well as to see what is happening. Instrumentality is happening at that moment.
Literally.
But it's shown in the perspective of the character's mind.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we kind of see their resolution of... It's kind of basically... It's a psychology session, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's basically... Who am I? What am I? Why do I perceive things like this? What, you know, who could I be? Who am I now? Who do I want to be?
It's literally as if Freud was running like an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting.
Pretty much. I think Freud, Shinji in a room dropping LSD.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what the episode...
In fact, if you've never done drugs and you watch those last two episodes, they're literally like what I imagine being on acid.
And again, very, very seizure-inducing.
Very trippy.
If you're not careful. But I kind of enjoyed them. In a weird way, because I do like a good like dream sequence, and I did, as the show went on, I did enjoy the more kind of like we said introspective kind of human condition, broken characters. I did enjoy that, so I kind of like it totally came out of left field because where I was like, okay, so what's the finale? And it's like there is
that was what? It.
Yeah,
watched it.
Yeah, I was like, after the previous episode, I was like, what? And again, like, I enjoyed them. Like, I think if you watch them on their own, I don't think they're that bad. I think if you separate them from the entire series, just watch those two episodes, 40 minutes or what have you.
Like a one. You could,
yeah, exactly. Like a... Well, I mean, now it's kind of like an alternate ending, isn't it, sort of thing?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so you can look at it. If you believe that's the true ending, it's a much happier ending.
Yeah.
Than what we actually get.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, I can understand why, again, nothing was tied up. No answers to pretty much anything.
Yeah, no definite final answer.
So again, fans were not happy. Big time.
Big time. So Gainax Studios was frequently vandalized because of it.
Jesus, really?
Frequently vandalized. Fuck. Oh, yeah. Anno himself was sent multiple death threats as well.
Jesus.
Which is like, now, this... brings me to an actually interesting fact about Anno himself. Yeah. Anno is an otaku.
Right.
He's probably not like, you know, the rabid, like we were talking about before, the rabid.
For the people that don't know, including myself, what is an otaku?
An otaku is an obsessive.
Right, okay, cool. Like OCD.
To put it bluntly, an obsessive. So an anime otaku is somebody who literally lives... breathes,
dies,
shit, dies, anime.
Fair enough.
Yeah, could also be likened to the hikikomori movement, if you call it that, the shut-ins.
Mm. Okay,
you don't go out. Ever. Anime is their life.
Yeah.
Fuck everything else, basically. But yeah, Anno is an otaku, but maybe not as severe as what a lot of other people would be.
Yeah, yeah.
He is a man who is quite proud of his country. He worries about his country.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it also comes back to maybe the social aspect of what's happening in Japan as well at the moment with their culture.
Hmm.
The elderly population is on the increase.
Yeah.
The younger population is not happening. A lot more people are deciding to either be the shut-ins, the hikikomori, or the women are deciding to have careers instead of having children, and good on them.
Yeah, fair play.
I'm in that
fair
crowd
play.
As well.
Yeah.
Things like that are happening. But he has a problem with the otaku culture. He said, yeah, being otaku is fine, but I don't see why you have to literally shut everyone out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the otaku culture that attacked him, that attacked the studio.
That just sounds like fandom, even at the moment.
Wrong.
Yeah, even at the moment, we see horrible things on Twitter.
A couple of weeks ago as well, when Kyoto Animation, when they were basically burnt down.
What? They were burnt down?
Yeah.
Why was that?
Oh, like 35 people died.
Fuck
yeah. And it was a man who had written a story for a competition that they were doing.
Right.
And then they must have produced some sort of anime, were doing something. And he said, they've fucking plagiarized my story. And he went in, doused the place while everybody's working, like, who the hell is this guy? Doused the place with petrol and set it on fire.
Jesus Christ.
That was a couple of weeks ago.
What's wrong with people?
Yeah. That is, I suppose, the worst end of that.
Yeah, that kind of fandom. Yeah. Any kind of fandom.
It's unreal.
It's crazy.
But Arnold himself was like, no, you need to. I think it comes back to Evangelion in that sense where, you know, it's showing all the characters having some kind of life outside their own little secular internal, you know, psychological self-beatings, basically.
Yeah.
It comes back around to that.
Yeah.
It's so weird and deep.
Yeah. Well, shocking. Shocking how, like, passion can turn in a negative way.
Yes.
Like, you can love something so much. Yeah. And I guess it's same with, like, relationships and stuff if they go terribly wrong. But
when that happened, though, with all the death threats and the vandalisms and people, you know, they were getting, like, hounded, stalked and all that business. Yeah. Anno's reply to it was the end of Evangelion.
Yeah.
And that was a massive fuck you.
Yeah. And it's the...
You wanted an ending, you would get.
And it is bleak as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, Sile invade, like, it kind of picks, so it forgets the last two episodes, picks up after the Kauron. Is it Kauron?
Kauru,
his episode. Actually, let's talk about that just very quickly. Yeah. Because it's Pride this weekend, so we've got to talk about some LGBT stuff. We have to. So that is a new child comes to pilot a new unit and Kaoru, and he introduces himself to Shenji, and he's kind of on his own. I think Oscar is off in a coma, sort of, or depression, deep depression.
Oh yeah, she's like in some sort of comatose little depression.
Yeah, she kind of can't pilot a thing. She can't sync with it.
It's
that's very Pacific Rim as well, isn't it? That whole syncing with the
You'd
robot.
Be surprised exactly how much Evangelion has influenced a lot of other things.
I can imagine.
Pacific Rim being one of them. Yeah. There's like way too many accounts.
I'm sure. And
Robin Williams was a fan.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
You remember the film 1 Hour Photo?
Yeah.
He's the assistant in
the
place.
Yeah, the creepy guy, yeah.
Yeah, likes the family. And the kid is looking at a figurine in the store, and it's actually a mass production Evangelion.
Really?
From Robin Williams' own personal collection. Yeah.
Amazing. And... Well, he had his own like battles with depression as well, and so I can see why he liked that show and invested in it. Back to that episode though, really good stuff. and he turns up, and he turns out he makes this connection, very kind of intimate connection with Shinji, and you know, he in the original translation says, I love you. Yeah. But there was controversy when it came over to Netflix because they changed the translation ever so slightly.
I like you.
Yeah, to I like you. And then a lot of people took real big offense to that.
Yeah, that's mainly because it does actually change the relationship between Kaoru and Shinji.
Yeah.
And also sort of impedes on the character development ever so slightly as well. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just one of those things. You know, this is why if you've got the chance to go and see like the original dub, I can't watch Evangelion in Japanese at all.
Fair enough.
Even with subtitles, I am not one of the elitists watching Japanese. Can't do that. Yeah. It works in English. Watch it in English.
I honestly put an anime on and I go, if it's in subtitles, I'll listen to it in subtitles. If it's got a dub on it, I'll do the dub.
Yeah.
Whatever
comes first.
Yeah, exactly. If whatever the company decides they want to put on, if I plus play on the DVD or whatever it is, and it's, you know, it is what it is, I just go, right, that's what it's going to be. Because I don't mind either. I've got nothing against either.
Nah, I don't either.
Yeah. No. So whatever comes first is fine. But I don't have a preference, you know. Yeah. But yes, like it's, so it became like a huge kind of, and there's like avid kind of fan backlash for this. And I think they tried to defend it a little bit. We were talking about like the development of Shinji, and he's like never had anybody say that to him.
No, he hasn't.
Like his mum died, his dad disappeared.
He's a knob.
you know, is never, he'd live with a teacher, you know, talk about, you know, troubling things. I wouldn't have a teacher say, I love you.
And even it's the a bit people weird. That he deals with on a daily basis they do not verbally communicate to it.
And I think, and again, I think that's a cultural thing as well. Yeah. I think Japanese people would very, very rarely say those words and they might feel it, but they would never express it in that way, in that form. So that's unusual across Japan and across the anime and across everything. So I can understand why they felt so hurt. And I think, you know, there's a lot of kind of LGBT plus Q plus erasure that happens. There's been a lot in the Marvel movies.
Oh yeah,
been so much in the Marvel Valkyrie, Black Panther, and every time I hear about it, I'm like, what are you doing? What was wrong with having that one scene or that one thing? Like, it's not going to hurt anybody. And like the only thing they've got past Disney so far is going, I missed somebody. I went on a date and I missed him. And that was it. That's their reference. And they go, the first official gay character in the Marvel Universe, just some dude in a, you know, and I'm just like, try a bit harder. Come on. You know, and so, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know Valkyrie's going to be they've gone like, Valkyrie is definitely now. Yeah. And it was heavily hinted, I know, but it wasn't, if something's explicit, you know, just, it might as well just be explicit. You're not going to hurt anybody. One, you know, gay people do exist. You know what I mean? They are in the world. You know, you're not going to erase them entirely. They will always be there. You know, just let them, you know, let them be.
Exactly.
I'm not hurting anybody. As long as I'm not hurting anybody, it's fine. All groups of people, not hurting anybody, it's fine. Good. Anyway, get off that.
Yeah.
Ooh, we're on our pedestals. We're on our soapboxes today.
do you not think, though, the Kaoru, when he does actually say to Shinji, he's like explaining something, he's like, it means I love you, Shinji.
Yeah.
Do you not think it just lends even further impact what happens?
Oh, God, yeah. And then, again, that's... I think it really... the show really does utilise those still moments.
Not only that, but they didn't have enough money.
Yeah, true. They had to reuse
a lot of animation. They do a lot of stills on it.
Yeah, yeah. But it's effective in those scenes. There's an elevator scene with Ray and Oscar, and it's really tense, awkward scene.
The lift.
Yeah, the lift scene. Yeah. And
literally the only movement in it, and it lasts a ridiculous amount of time, but the only movement in it is when Oscar twitches and goes.
Yeah, or yeah, like coughs or whatever she does. Yeah, and I was just like, and then eventually the conversation starts. But again, Oscar's, I don't think we talk much about Oscar, but she's very much this kind of fiery redhead from Germany, always angry, always like calling people perverts and stuff. Which is not wrong.
Absolutely besotted with Kaji.
Yeah, exactly.
And God. Kaji.
Yeah. Okay, he is quite handsome and charming. I'll give you that. He is, you know, I was like, he's super cool. Does he die?
He gets shot.
Is that on screen? Is it implied? I can't remember. I might have been looking at my phone.
He is shot. He's in this warehouse. He's essentially a triple agent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a double agent, triple agent. You die with death, boy. He gets shot. He knows as well.
Yeah.
And he says to whoever's doing the shooting, you don't actually see who's doing it. And it's never spoken about or anything like that after.
Yeah.
It's like, you're a bit late, aren't you? Bang.
Very cold. And Misato keeps, because he's involved with Misato, like, romantically.
He actually starts to tell her the truth from what he's found out as well. Yeah. Because she's completely kept in the dark by what the ulterior motive is.
Exactly, yeah. She has no idea.
It just basically makes it go a bit wrong.
Yeah,
She leaves her a message. She keeps it on her answer machine. And she's all sake and tears into it all the time. So,
yeah. What can you say? What can you even say on an audio-based podcast? I can't even talk. That's the only thing I'm supposed to do. But yeah, it's hard. It's like, it grabs you and doesn't let go.
It's hard going.
You know what? It kind of is a bit like life. It kind of, it's exciting. It has its ups and downs. There can be long stretches of absolute kind of sadness and doubt and questioning yourself and your world and the people around you. And then it kind of ends and you didn't really have a meaning to it.
exactly.
I guess. So, yeah, and...
You're just kind of, like, dotting about between bits in the series.
I know.
Cannot state even
we can.
Probably what we've already done, but you need to watch it for yourself.
And it's not a lot to watch. Like, for me, I just watched what's on available currently on Netflix.
Yep.
First 26 episodes. Then you've got, is it Death True or what's the name of the recap movie?
So the original release was Death and Rebirth.
Right, that's it.
But yeah, they've like renamed it again for this Netflix release.
But it is on that. I think it's something like maybe Death True or something like that. But it's basically a recap of the full series, like an hour long, I think.
About an hour, and then you've got maybe like 20-something minutes of new footage at the end of that, which then leads you into the end of Evangelion.
Because they forget the last two episodes, basically, that we talked about. They just kind of cut that off. That's why we've been jumping around this so much, is we can't...
You can't pinpoint it.
You can't grasp it.
Define.
Yeah. Go and go, oh, it's about robots. But it's not about robots. And it's not about the human condition, but it is kind of about robots. You know, one of the things I really liked about the robots was that they have to be plugged in.
Yeah.
I love that.
Umbilical cables.
Yeah, they've got it's like proper, like, old school.
A lot of power.
Just like my iPhone, man. I've got a constantly have a pump in. It's just the same. And then they've got a bit of residual energy, don't they? Like 5 minutes or something?
They have like, they do have like internal batteries, but obviously to power a machine.
Yeah, that size.
Of that size, with that range of movement and blah, blah, blah. It literally only just lasts minutes. Although there was the one episode, do you remember the big creepy spider, I think?
Yeah. When
dripping the acid down.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Cut out. That is one of my favourite episodes.
It's good.
A lot of my favourite episodes of this program do not revolve around just sheer battles of like, oh, there's an angel coming, trying to think now.
I really like the one where they have to, there's an angel that can split itself into two or more.
Dance Like You Want to Win.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was called.
And they have to sync up, Oscar and Shinji have to sync up completely, entirely, be as one to defeat this. This is what I was saying, all the episodes are so unique and the ways they have to defeat the angels are so unique. It's like, I probably couldn't come up with that many ideas I was like, that one's a big spider and it does this and but I thought that was fascinating, and because that they're so polar opposites as well, and they kind of, and I quite like the attraction between them as well. I've had similar relationships, I think, in the past. a few fiery ladies. I like the kind of the dichotomy between the two, and it's a really cool episode. But like you said, the best episodes are the one that I think 50% amazing cool robot fights and 50% human condition.
Yeah.
I think those are the ones that really stand out. Like you said, you don't like that those two episodes, which is pure human condition.
Yeah.
Nothing but human condition and, flash, 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 flash. No animation. And
I think it's because I personally like to know more about the individual characters than not the kids.
Yes. And they're mostly operating they're the man in the chair type thing, aren't they? So they're... Boy racer there, you probably heard him. Sound like a wet fart, to be honest, driving past. I think those are the kind of ones, because the personal stuff informs the battle as well. So it makes the battle, you're more invested in the battle because you've had the human condition stuff. I'm sure that's the same with most shows and stuff. There's obviously other things going on before the fights. It's hard to pin down, and we have jumped all over the show, but like you said, so much more. There's mangas, there's a reboot.
Got one down.
All right. Oh, there you go. Nice.
there is the rebuild. The rebuild is a completely different beast altogether.
Okay.
And to be honest, I'm not a massive fan.
Fair enough. Has the original director,
he left Gainax and he made his own company, Studio Kara.
Okay.
Took a couple of people from Gainax with him, and he's been working on the rebuild. Granted, looks absolutely gorgeous, obviously, with the
new
advancements in
CG and stuff.
He uses CG in it. It is obvious, but it doesn't take away from the rest of the animation, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But the story is quite convoluted. Mm. Evangelion, the series, and the two films that came after Death and Rebirth and End of Evangelion, are convoluted enough as they are.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's again, it's convoluted yet vague, yet convoluted. And again, we can't pin it down in the time we've had for this.
Yeah, I
highly recommend going out and watching it yourself, because it is truly an experience. You will either love it, you'll hate it.
Oh, you'll be like, that was okay.
But I would recommend everybody seeing it, because it is absolutely fascinating to watch. And it's got so, and there's so many kind of, like we said, so many articles, videos, you name it. And we could do a whole season of this, like we said, because we just focus on one element of the show and massive, massive stuff involved.
I think incredible. One thing that I do have to say about Evangelion, though, for anyone who does actually watch it, concentrate on the other characters that are not the kids.
Yeah.
Because you'll get a lot more information from them and maybe even a bit more entertainment from them as well. But there's only one kid that I think you specifically need to focus on over the whole series, and that is Rei.
I think Rei's an important character, a very important character.
But especially when you do get into the end of that.
Spoiler. I know we've done some spoilers, but I don't think we'll get into the race.
I think maybe if everybody just watches the 26 episodes in the series, I'm not going to say much about the end of Evangelion because that is an alternative ending. Make your mind up about the series, watch the end of Evangelion, and then you'll see exactly what we've been talking about.
Exactly, exactly. And again, we jumped around a lot, but we can't really talk about one element without talking about the others.
Exactly.
It's really hard, but I've had a lot of fun talking about this, and thank you for having me around as well. It's been a lot of fun.
I've had fun because it's one subject that I do actually know quite a bit about, but when I'm like, you know, just talking to somebody and they're like, why are you talking to me?
What
you're saying words.
Yeah, you got like robots and stuff. Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah, I really like this. You're going to bloody listen. That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is. But yeah, no, it's been really, really good. Thank you for welcoming to your home. I'll have you back on again. I'd love to do, I know you're a massive fan of Ghost in the Shell.
A massive fan of Ghost in the Shell. I live it.
I live for it.
I was talking about otaku. You've got no idea how I come to Ghost in the Shell. I have got the tattoos on my neck.
We'll do it. If you want to come... You want to come back, I'm happy to have you back, or I'll come here, whatever is cool. I think that'll be amazing, but thank you very much for, I think we talked about everything I think I wanted to cover, roughly.
You've learned something.
Vaguely, so... I've learned loads, man, I've learned so much. That's why I like getting guys like you on, because, you know, you always, you know, I've always got something that I've come away with, I'm like, oh, that's amazing. More information. Just to finish off, where to find me on the social medias and to get the podcast. I'm on Facebook at Secret Balls. So if you put that in the search bar, Twitter, it's at Dan_Balls. Instagram is Spider Dan Secret Balls. Podcast is available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and many, many more. And you're at
Kusanagi Cosplay UK on Facebook and Instagram.
Perfect, perfect, excellent. Thanks again. This has been a blast. And just remember, guys, get in that robot.